My name is Gary Butterfield, he, him.
My name is Kay Ross, she, her.
And you're listening to Best Quality Vacuum, the duck feed show about Better Call Saul.
And this week we're talking about the episode Quite a Ride, which was written by Anne Cherkis, directed by Michael Morris, and it originally aired on September the 3rd of 2018.
Yeah, I wouldn't quite call this episode Quite a Ride. It's introducing plots I like.
Yeah.
This episode, the next episode, and the episode after that, I watched them all together, and spoiler, we're recording them all together.
Yes.
They do kind of run together for me.
A little bit.
All good stuff. Just we're setting tables.
Yeah. It's like staggered setup. we are watching a crane drop all of the cars at the starting line one by one.
Yes.
And then they're going to start going all at once.
Exactly. Yeah. Jimmy's cell phone plot continues. He decides to go hit the streets in a tracksuit to do some sales. And this is kind of beginning, and this really kind of climaxes in the third episode that we're going to be talking about today, but that's in 3 weeks, yeah. In 2 weeks for you, with a separation from Kim. He is drifting from Kim.
Yes.
They're going to kind of continue to drift and then be brought back together as things happen through this. But he's keeping secrets, and he's also, one of the things I think the show is doing is, when they are not engaging as Victor and Giselle, there's not that much Kim and Jimmy, you know, like there is, but that is where their spark is.
Yeah.
You know, and we're in a Giselle and Victorless timeline right now.
It is the grift that that holds them together. Not even the grift, because they're not doing it for a huge personal gain. It is the game, I suppose.
Yeah. They both like to play.
And that is the big realization that Kim ultimately has, I think it's great that it's working towards that and showing us how little there is, you know, elsewise.
I really like how, I had forgotten how much Kim takes charge with a lot of these scams and flams.
Oh yeah.
Moving forward. She is just as scammy and just as flammy.
Yeah, but in a more structured way. I love it.
Yeah. She loves to scam and flam. It is it is the spice that keeps them together. We got Super Lab Origins.
We do. A thing that annoys some people, but I think leads to good things, because I love Werner Ziegler.
Oh, yeah.
I wish that we had more time with him on rewatches. It is shocking how little of him we get. There's five episodes, and then
he has gone. A candle in the wind.
Yeah.
they should re-release that song like they did with Lady Di, and then re-release it again for Werner Ziegler. I roll my eyes at the idea of we had to figure out how they did the super lab. It's very in keeping with this universe, though, to say, hey, this thing that is a crime assumption is actually incredibly boring and difficult and dangerous and involves human life.
Yeah.
In this, this thing that we just kind of decided would be cool. We want to show the work that went into that, because there was pathos in that. And I love how it articulates.
Yes.
I love Werner. I love this plot line.
Yeah. There is a huge cost to build this monument to Gus's triumph over the cartel that eventually becomes a tomb.
Super tomb. a very versatile tomb, actually.
Yeah. But I love Werner Ziegler, this kind of doughy, middle-aged, meek German man who is such a great foil. Like their relationship together, Mike and Werner's relationship together is such an excellent foil for what ultimately happens between Mike and Walt.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Right? I love it. We get to see Mike. Mike takes, kids. He likes surrogate sons, but this is the first time he's had a friend that we've seen, a peer friend. He'll take Nacho under his wing a little bit. He takes Jesse under his wing. He has a peer somebody he respects, and that's really cool to see. This is kind of some of that, when we wanted Mike to have a friend. this is kind of it. And of course it ends in the most tragic possible way. Let's get into it with what is a little bit of a tease of a cold open. This could have happened anywhere.
It could have. I feel like they are trying to, draw a connection between some of the things that happen here with like, okay, like this is really where he gets started down the road. Right. I think that they're trying to show us an endpoint so that we get a reminder for where it's going.
It's such a mild
at this particular point. Yeah.
Opening point though.
Yeah.
You know, like I still, there's the end of the season, we're not going to record that now. But the end of the season is the moment where Bob Odenkirk says, like, oh, this is where Saul Goodman is born.
Yeah.
You know, it's not selling cell phones.
No.
Like, I'm still with him. This doesn't bother me. Mm-hmm. This is harmless and such. So, yeah. Like, taking this very intense ending here with something that is, you know, legitimate, mm-hmm. like, it's fine, is weird to me. Like, yes. This feels like a little bit of, you know, throwing a little chum in the water for the boys.
Yeah.
You know, getting a little, like, throw some apps at the sack pack to me.
Yeah. This also, like, it does end with an underline. Like, you know, it is a burner that he uses to make the call to, you know, to best quality vacuum. It is a burner Ziegler.
Yes, of course it is. You know, because, like, why wouldn't you? These exist in this world. Yeah. And in the real world.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but it's a lot of attention paid to this thing that is a pretty innocuous object that's neither illegal nor inherently interesting.
Yeah. They're setting up as a through line that is not especially meaningful or resonant.
For me, it's not super resonant. I like the scene, but it doesn't it doesn't feel like it ties in very strongly to me.
I need both sides of Francesca. Like, I love that we get more pissed off, disillusioned Francesca.
I do like that.
Yeah. So this is a flash forward. It's in the timeline of Breaking Bad. Sorry, too many B's. It takes place during Ozymandias. It is right before Saul calls Best Quality Vacuum, calls Ed to get disappeared. And the office is in chaos. Francesca is furiously shredding. Saul is like just completely ripping down the drop ceiling, trying to find his duffel bag full of cash, which he's very happy is still there. Mm-hmm. the assumption is that he thought Francesca would take it. So it makes up like, oh yeah, mice and squirrels, you know, they can get in there. You're nesting squirrels.
I didn't pick that up. I didn't think he thought Francesca would take it. Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah. Hmm.
That's what she thinks anyway. Because she takes exceptions like, oh, it's still here. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really bizarre to think of Francesco crawling around in the ceiling. Francesco's in the crawl space again. Yeah. In the very fun, very blunt visual metaphors in the show, he takes a box cutter and opens up the Constitution behind his desk. Just slashes into pieces in order to find the cardboard box, the one we saw in the premiere. Mm-hmm. We'll see this before. Francesca finishes up and Saul says, hey, you know, discard the shreds, separate dumpsters. And she looks at him. He gives her a roll of cash and she stares at him long enough. He gives her a second one.
Yeah.
And, you know, you got the rundown, you know, if the cops question you, you know, talk to my attorney. Mm-hmm. And he gives her a referral for attorney. Tell him Jimmy sent you. And we get this, you know, some real planning. He says, you know, and you're going to be there, right? You know, and she says, yeah, November 12th, 3 p.m. Mm-hmm. You know, but just know if that phone doesn't ring on the dot, I'm out. No, it'll ring.
The tell him Jimmy sent you, there's like a little bit of resignation in his delivery and the way that Francesca just kind of like does like a beat at that. It's like, oh, this is somebody who like you who doesn't know you anymore, who does not know what you've become if you're calling back to this. It's like he's talking about a different human.
Well, he's just falling out of it, you know. That would have made sense 20 minutes ago. You know, he's adjusting to his new life. Like, oh yeah, no, that doesn't mean anything. That doesn't do it.
Yeah.
You know, and he tries to get sentimental a little bit. You know, he goes, yeah, it's been quite a ride, huh? He tries to hug and she just goes, yep. And hauls out the garbage shreds. She's not going to hug him. And then Jimmy grabs that burner, calls Ed, you know, and this is going to give birth to Gene Takovic. You know, my vacuum's running hot. How hot? Red hot. Yeah. You know, he breaks the phone and stares.
at his works, Ye Mighty, you know, there in the office that is completely ripped apart. I love this because I got a gut sense for it, and then I had it confirmed reading the trivia. This was shot on film, like Breaking Bad was, and like you can tell even just by like the like saturated use of colors in this, like they went to lengths to make this look like Breaking Bad, which is neat.
Yeah. Yeah. So we got Jimmy killing time in the cell phone store. You know, he's painted the windows saying he's selling privacy, but that doesn't do anything. But a guy eventually pulls up. He does a very funny, like, pull past and go, wait a second. And then he backs up. Did I tell you that when me and Liv were driving on 82nd at one point, and a guy did that for a prostitute? Like, did no. One of those funny, like, whoa, like, cartoon wolf boner. You know, and like turned off to the side road to go talk to this prostitute, this working girl. Yeah.
Wow. Zowie.
It was very funny. Like it was like a boing heard all around the Jade District.
Yeah. And fucking 82nd.
Yeah.
Busy ass street.
Busy street. But I mean, there are sex workers on 82nd. Yep. Yeah. I've seen them and such. It's a city. It happens. It was just very funny to have somebody very cartoonishly boonga. That's this guy, but with cell phones.
Yes. And Jimmy, he sets up his little game. You know, he has a stack of cell phones behind him with like little signs, you know, to hold, right? And he's like, he's finishing up a fake phone call saying like, yeah, no, I can sell you, I can sell you six phones. And then he breaks the phone that he's using, you know, just like making a big show of it. And you know, this is when he sets the phone aside, and the, you know, the guy who walks in is curious, like this is a strange situation. And he's like, privacy from who?
Yeah.
Jimmy's answer. Come on. Well, you know,
yeah, Jimmy can't just say, hey, this is to skirt the law.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like the IRS, you know, bingo, you know, and he talks about basically why you'd use this, you know, information hygiene, use it once per, you know, he goes once per what? Once per week, once per call, once per day, you know, it's up to you, but it's cheaper than an audit.
Yeah.
This is going to keep the IRS off you. And he takes the phone out of the guy's hand and puts it back on the stack, you know, basically doing good salesmanship.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, you want to dangle it in front of them and then take it away.
Yeah. This offer will last for 10 more minutes.
Yeah. Seal the option away so people will get more enthusiastic about grabbing it. God, I love this. This is just a crooked contractor.
Yeah. God bless him. And then he walks out with, he's bought all six phones.
Yes.
We get one of my favorite, just weird little tributaries of this universe to me is this guy.
I love this French man.
I talked about this in the Discord. I don't think you saw it, but give me this. A spinoff where this Frenchman is building a shed arcade for Declan. Like Declan gets Gus's sloppy seconds and gets this architect to build like a really cool big shed arcade for him and just do that whole thing over the course of a season.
And it's just like, it's constantly like overrunning.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, so this guy, this French guy, you know, arrives, steps out of airport shuttle, takes a rental car to a meetup in the highway, looks at a phone, you know, and the phone rings and everything. He goes there and he has to put on this hood.
Yeah.
You know, if you have to use the bathroom, use it now. He's going to drive for a long way with a hood over his head.
Yes.
Which would suck.
It's OPSEC.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, trying to hide. It is funny because it cuts like through all the sounds. Like somebody could actually like put together where they're going. You know, he's unmasked and he's standing in the laundromat. This does feel like a comedy beat, but I think that it is establishing something. It is establishing the caution and establishing kind of a shared value between Mike and Gus. So Mike says like, hey, you know, we can't leave the footprint of the building. The entrance has to be over there by that dryer. And the guy pulls out like this sophisticated equipment and then just like very like quickly and carelessly just like takes a couple of measurements and trusts it and says like, oh yeah, no, like we can finish this in 7 months. I could probably get it down to six. It took me 17 weeks to build a three quarter mile long tunnel under El Paso. I could totally do it.
there's a little bit of, he's definitely careless of this. There's a little bit of bad, evil, you know, bad crime engineer uses electronic instruments, but good crime engineer uses old-fashioned stuff that I thought was a little silly. In this, like him pulling out the laser, like Mike's like, laser measurements. But, you know, that's what a real life Werner Ziegler would also probably use during this. You know, the fact that he's quick, though, Mike gets a call. He's like, yeah, that's what I thought. And he said, thank you for your time. You'll find a return ticket. What a pain in the ass. I hope he is well compensated for flying, you know, from
Europe. Around the world.
Yeah, twice. In the span of, you know, 24 hours.
Yeah. But like, you know, I think that like, okay, so the laser part of this is not so much the problem as it is the like the extremely aggressive quote, like six months is completely unrealistic.
It's unreasonable. And he didn't take enough time to determine that and everything.
There's
just a little bit of Mike roll in his eyes when the laser comes out. There's like definitely a contrast between like making paper notes and using, you know, devices. That felt a little bit silly to me. But I think I agree with you that the point of it is that he's not taking, you know, he's over promising without enough information. Not taking it seriously.
So we get Kim at the courthouse, and she coaches a client and then goes to Oakley saying like, hey, you know, I want this deal. You know, this kid can't go to jail. And he says, oh, and I want to win the lottery and breed labradoodles. The fucking inner life on this guy.
Yeah. Fascinating. And Kim gets aggressive. You know, the police took a statement before he was Mirandized, and you knew about it. You know, 6 months jail time, 1 year probation. You know, he's like, I was caught on camera. It's jewelry store robbery. They're going back and forth. And they keep arguing when they get to the bench. And then Kim doubles down, you know, 4 months probation because you're annoying. And, you know, I have all the time in the world. You know, my only other client is a bank. And right before they have to go into it, he finally relents. Four months probation.
Yes. And Kim won, but after the hearing, Veal is like, hey, we're going to be late for this meeting with Mesa Verde. She's letting stuff slip.
The client whines about the probation, and she said, you know, she puts him in his place. She, you know, moms him. You know, you better beg grandpa for a restaurant job, and if you don't keep your nose clean, you're going to grown-up jail. You know, and know this, I'm not going to do a damn thing about it. Like, this is your one chance. Yeah. Feel grateful.
I love this because she is talking to Jimmy. She just doesn't know it yet.
You know, she's going to do that for him many times.
Well, But it is just that there's some dramatic irony to it, I suppose, in hindsight. So it's that night, and they're, you know, ready to have a night in. Jimmy spots Dr. Zhivago on the TV guide, and like, lots of attractive men in the snow. That's your favorite genre. But Kim needs to work.
And Jimmy has to watch this, you know, alone, which is not what he wants.
No.
You know, talked about this before. All Jimmy wants is to work and hang out with Kim. Like scams, old movies, work. So he's got, he's like, I got something to do at work. You know, that's ludicrous. It's night.
It's a retail job, dude.
Yeah, it's a retail job. But he, you know, it's all good. Don't wait up. He heads over to CC Mobile and buys a bunch of the prepaid phones. And then starts selling them. He offers them to three teens, one of which is a level of ginger that cannot be described.
The lead guy, he
is like a redheaded Beavis.
No, in the notes, Gary, I literally have him later on referred to as Danger Beavis.
We got Danger Beavis. I didn't see that in the notes, but he's a Beavis. It's real, like he's he's very much so. You know, they call him a narc. He's like, oh, a narc drive a piece of shit like this is steam. And he's like, okay, I don't look the part. There's a nail salon, gets his tracksuit. And we get his montage of him selling phones at the doghouse in his tracksuit, mall walking sneakers, and a pompadour set to street life. And this is one of those
machine.
I love it. One of those montages of like the people who hang out at the doghouse. You know,
God, if we ever take that Breaking Bad trip to ABQ, like we need to eat at the doghouse. It looks so good.
Of course we would. It'd be great. I'd buy a cell phone.
You know, as he's going and, you know, just wheeling around, selling these things, making, you know, making pitches, the danger teens are watching him. You know, clearly watching him amass all of this cash. And then the crowd clears away because some bikers show up on their big, loud, stinky hogs. Yeah. And Jimmy pauses for a beat and is like, nope, I got to do this. And he goes up and asks about the ring. Like, hey, did you get that in Las Cruces? No, it was Las Lunas. I love his joke. Off by one.
He had to do this. Like, this is dangerous. Yes. These guys showing up is the implication. But Jimmy wants a little bit of danger.
Yeah.
You know, he's only got a couple of phones left. He could very reasonably call it a night.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's like, no, I'm going to finish this out. Like, let's fucking roll the dice. Like, that's what Jimmy wants from us.
Yes.
I love the kind of side threat of the biker gang. Mm-hmm. Like, we never got a spinoff about that. If this were a The Wire like show, mm-hmm. we would check that out as well. But like, these allusions to the biker crank and the biker gangs.
As the bikers other, and their peanut butter crank.
Yeah, they got the peanut butter crank. Yeah. I love getting a little cameo from these guys.
Yeah.
You know, he makes his pitch, says it'll help him talk to their colleagues inside. You know, they can fit anywhere. And he makes the sale. He sold everything. You know, but when he goes back to his car, the danger teens hold him up.
Yeah.
You know, he tries to brush him off.
Good luck with the junior achievement project, but I gotta go.
No, but they beat him up. They attack him. They knock him to the ground. They take his money.
Yeah. Just totally kicking him in the flank.
Yep.
Oh. Yeah. And so Kim wakes up to the sound of Jimmy cleaning himself up in the bathroom, and she's concerned. You know, his cover story is that he got mugged, but you know, she's looking at her boyfriend in a real rough shape, and also saying he doesn't want to go to the ER.
Yeah. She starts helping him treat his wounds. You know, look at us for like a Matthew Brady photo.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
Civil War photographer. Yeah.
Yeah. I think we need a Canon to sell that. That's very cute. Mm-hmm. And she confirms the details that he shared.
Yeah.
You know, he lost track of time, parked too near the doghouse, you know, and he says, you know, what the hell is wrong with me? And and she says, it sounds like you were in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Yeah.
You know, again, kind of that double meaning.
Yeah.
Shouldn't be doing this.
No. And you know, it kind of bemoans and reminisces, says, you know, back in the day, you know, I would have seen those guys coming and they would have known not to mess with me. Yeah. And she asks why. It's like, you know, it's just real sheepish. You get the sense he doesn't talk a lot about his ne'er-do-well life before. This is because I would have been one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kim's like, oh, well, those days are over. Like, it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Yeah. And he starts trailing off. He says, you know, I think tomorrow I might call that shrink. You know, couldn't hurt. And the next morning he washes then scrapes the windows at the store.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm over this. We're going to see, he's going to fall back into this.
Yeah.
You know, again, this push pull of him wanting the game and Kim wanting the game in different, slightly different ways is, you know, what these middle seasons are about. Mm-hmm. Kim goes to a client's house, this young girl who didn't show up because she's freaking out about going to jail, and is a good, you know, public attorney. You
good
know,
counselor.
A good, yeah, good counselor. Like, that is what this is showing. You know, her PD stuff is good. You know, takes her time, talks sense to her. You know, you're going to get jail time if you don't show up.
Yes.
You know, the important thing is she ignored a phone call during this from Mesa Verde. She gets a girl dressed, and when she answers the phone, it's Paige. There's a Mesa Verde emergency. Viola messed up some shit, you know, messed up some things. And Kim says, I can't go. And Kim hangs up on her.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, a big deal.
Not great professional behavior.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, the parallel here is they're both doing things they're not interested in.
Yeah.
In order to, but they, and are flirting with the thing they are interested in.
Yes.
And it's making the thing that they are not interested in suffer.
Yes.
Like, Jim and Kimmy are in the same spot. At this point, with PD work and with the game,
they're both moonlighting, right?
Yes,
yeah. And so, like, when Kim shows up at Mesa Verde, Paige is furious, and it's like, hey, the mistake wasn't the problem, you know, took a whole floor the whole floor of people to undo it because we didn't have the original documents. You had them. Kevin isn't available for an apology. Like, the problem is hanging up. Like, hey, when you made your pitch to us, like when you said that you were perfect for this, you said we would be your sole focus, and you're out there ignoring us for God knows what, right?
Yep. And good point. You know, like, this is fair.
Yeah.
You know, obviously I care more about PD than bank stuff.
Yeah. But if people are relying on you, if you made a promise,
you shouldn't have gotten into banking.
Yeah.
You know, if this isn't what you wanted to do. Kim promises it won't happen again. Mike's driving a new guy. This is Werner Ziegler to the laundry. And Werner Ziegler is immediately less of a, you know, less cool of a cucumber.
Yeah.
You know, he is complaining. He's very nauseous. nauseate during this. You know,
I sympathize with this so much. Yeah. Just being a little nerd, nerd who's constantly nauseous.
Yeah. I mean, I can't. I get carsick with my eyes open.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way I could do this.
No. I'm going to throw up. I suggest you don't.
Yeah, don't. Once they land, you know, Werner splashes himself some water and gags. I take the Dramamine. I mean, it doesn't help.
Yeah.
And he pulls out measuring tools and a little traveler's notebook.
Yes.
And starts working his notes. Mm-hmm. He does it manually, paces out the distances. He measures with tapes, making diagrams of the equipment they have to work around. And Mike asks for the verdict, and Werner gives him the bad news first. You know, this is the operative difference. It's not just the measurement thing I mentioned earlier. It is that he's not leading with, of course I can fucking do it.
Yeah.
You know, he's not trying to sell him on anything.
Yeah, not razzle dazzling, not selling him a bill of goods, you know.
Yes.
Actually foreseeing foreseeing and being honest about the complications that are coming.
Yeah. You know. All at night, no one will see it. We're gonna hit rocks, that's gonna be blasting. Judging from the sounds I hear, we're not from a town. It's going to be difficult. And Gus walks down. Mm-hmm. Gus likes this guy.
Yes.
And says, so you're saying it's impossible? And, dangerous, difficult, and very, very expensive. Not quite impossible. Mm-hmm. And Gus introduces himself in German. This is our guy.
Yeah. The perfect match. I love the facial acting on Mike too, as Werner's doing this. Like, Mike's fucking in love.
Yeah. Yeah. This is all Mike wants. Mike wants somebody else who is a competency elemental.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it turns out Werner's not quite that, but he is in the by standards of the straight world.
Yeah. He is upright. And so, you know, as far as somebody who, you know, knows what their building can be here, he is upright and competent, if not entirely reliable under pressure. He ends up kind of being another person who's not cut out for the game.
It's through unforced error, mm-hmm. you know, through himself. Like, it's very, we're going to talk about this in the next couple episodes. It's very important to me that Werner gets the warning.
Yes.
That he gets.
Yeah.
I think that Mike doing that is a really monumental thing. Mm-hmm. It's, he wouldn't do it in Breaking Bad. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a step. He gave this guy as much rope as he possibly could.
Yes, because he liked him, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, he's not going to do a lot of that again in the future. He's gonna become a Tyrus and a Victor to a certain extent for a little while, at least, until Jesse kind of opens him up. But yeah, just the inherent trustworthiness of a Ziegler. There's like this, I don't know, anecdote, parable, you know, just like little thing. The old butcher, and it's like, you'd like, okay, person goes to the deli and like orders a bunch of lunch meat. The guy doesn't weigh it, just says, hey, here's a half pound. You know, does this a few times, and the guy's like, oh, like, you, how do I know you're not ripping me off? And it's like, oh, well, okay, I can show you. You know, it comes out. Mm-hmm. He just knows. He's been doing it long enough. It's like internalized. I love that. I love Werner as this like perfect representative of the old butcher. Somebody who's just, just got it in him. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He's been doing this forever. This is what you want if you're building an underground super lab.
Yeah.
Jimmy shows up at the courthouse for his PPD check-in, goes to the bathroom, and he finds Howard. And Howard, it's very funny what they've done to Howard. Like, the next couple times Howard appears, they're really good.
Like every single time we've seen Howard, like since the funeral, pretty much. Like, if you thought he looked like shit when he came over and said, "Hey, I think Chuck killed himself," he was just completely hollowed out. Like, they've done something with the makeup under his eyes. Half of his face is just sagging and dark.
They should have shown him with a different Chuck he made out of like a shrub and a paper plate.
Yeah.
That he's been hiding with. It's like, me and my new partner, Howard. Me and my new partner, Chuck.
Chuck the plant.
Chuck the plant. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And Jimmy asks if he's okay. And Howard goes, you ever have insomnia? No, I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy. Insomnia is horrible.
It's awful. Yeah.
You know? And he asks what's eating him. And Jimmy goes, I think I've shared enough.
Howard
goes, yeah.
Yeah, I think I've shared
this enough. This is the last time we've seen Howard was when Kim read him the riot act.
Yes.
About him dumping that on Jimmy.
Yeah.
This is what we're learning here is Howard doesn't have anybody.
No.
One of my favorite micro scenes in this is the cold open peek into his home life. Mm-hmm. We get in the next season. Yeah, Howard doesn't have anybody.
No, Howard doesn't have anybody. And, you know, the Chuck left a huge hole. Chuck's passing left a huge hole in his life that he is mourning in a way that contrasts to, you know, to Jimmy. This is absolutely what they're showing here, you know, especially because, you know, he asks like, hey, are you seeing anybody, you know, just kind of doing a little bit of a knife twisting. Like, it didn't feel good when somebody recommended I saw a therapist. So here's this for you. It's like, oh, I've even got a number. And Howard says, I already have a therapist. You know, really? Like, yeah, go twice a week. Is he any good? Yes. So like Jimmy's seeing, okay, here's Howard, this person I hate, who's going to a therapist, and this is what he's like. Is that what a therapist is going to turn me into? It is like two completely different approaches, two completely different like results from the same, from the same loss, from the same bereavement. Yeah.
It's not just different, you know, is this what a therapist turns you into, but do I want to be this type of guy?
Yeah.
You know, do I want to be somebody who is, this is pitiful?
Yeah.
Do I want to be pitiful? Like, I didn't see him offering the therapist number as a knife twisting thing. Like, it doesn't feel good when somebody says, have you seen a therapist? Even though, like, no one has ever said that with malice.
Yeah.
It's like the kindest thing you can say to anybody. Yeah. But like the, you know, it's just him being like, okay, you know, like, this guy's really fucking going through it.
Yeah.
And also, this guy's fucking weak as shit.
Yeah.
You know, there's an element of disgust to it.
Yeah.
When he hears this.
There's also an element of like, okay, like this person is, oh, I don't need to see a therapist. This guy, like, he is seeing a therapist because this is what grief is supposed to look like. And my grieving right now does not look like that.
Yeah, I'm not doing this.
Yeah, I'm not doing this. So obviously, I don't need a lawyer. Or I don't need a therapist.
I send you to a motion court.
Obviously, I don't need a plumber.
Yeah, exactly. I follow you to an emotion, grief. So Howard leaves and Jimmy tears up the post-it note. He's not going to go see a therapist.
No.
And he does his check-in. You know, hours done, job obtained. He's not associating with known criminals, you know, he says. And the officer asks what his plans are for after PPD. And he's inspired. Like, seeing this a little bit, he's like, no, fuck this shit. Mm-hmm. You know, in 9 months, 24 days, I'm going to get my law license back. I'm going to get my partner. We're going to have a bigger office than better. You know, a bigger office than ever. We're going to take the legal world by storm, you know, basically. Yes.
Yeah. And he's, you know, kind of being a little manic here, right? He's talking to him. He's talking to himself too. And the guy, you know, the officer is like, okay, so lawyer? Yeah, lawyer. Yeah. I just need something to put on the form, dude.
Yeah. And that's kind of the episode. You know, it's again, play setting. Mm-hmm. We're in the play setting season for the most part.
Yeah.
Good stuff happening. Good, you know, places are set. Mm-hmm. But we are watching them be set.
Yes.
You know, as an individual episode, I find one of the things about Better Call Saul that's interesting is I find individual episodes not harder to talk about, but less to talk about than kind of grander plot lines or anything. It is a more zoomed in show than Breaking Bad with less like kind of plot incident.
Yeah.
Through that. There's character stuff, but the character stuff is slow build. It's not a lot of changes in direction. So like when we get stuff like this episode where they're showing the parallel of Kim and Jimmy, of both of them doing work they do not enjoy and being tempted by the work they do enjoy and the work they don't enjoy suffering for that, we're just building more, we're providing more evidence to it.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't feel like there is a change of direction. It's just building up a pressure valve.
Yes.
On it, kind of slowly.
Mm-hmm. It's, and like we can talk about it when we see the first signs of it, but then every other time, unless it's, you know, kind of like a major development, it's kind of like, oh yeah, this is still going on.
Yeah. You know, and it's very entertaining. It works as a show. It's interesting in how it doesn't quite like thwart analysis because there's analysis to be done.
Yeah.
But it blunts it a little bit, I think, you know, because it's hard to find new insight in, this is still a thing it's doing. Mm-hmm. You know, this is still a theme that the show is underlining. This is still a character beat and character quality they're trying to highlight.
Yeah.
You know,
as the incident cranks up And things start moving a little bit faster and honestly get, you know, a little bit more Breaking Bad-like. It never gets entirely there. I think that is, you know, going to change a little bit. But we're spending a lot of time like in the motivation and psychology zone.
Yes.
Yeah.
Again, though, like the motivation and psychology zone, great.
That's good. It's necessary.
But not new psychology and everything. It's just stuff we've been, you know, we're on the third episode of Jimmy isn't warning Chuck properly.
Yeah.
You know, and kind of, and torn between straight life and the game, you know, and we're going to spend some time in that still. Season four of the show is weird.
Yes.
Like, I like it. Tons of good things happen. I think season four is weird. Mm-hmm. Seasons one and four, I think, are the weird seasons of the show, basically. Yes. What can people do if they like this show?
If people like the show, they can go to patreon.com/TuckFeeTV, kick us a few bucks a month and get a whole bunch of bonus content. Also help us continue to be able to do the show.
Yeah, we really appreciate that. If you, in either case, you can also help us by writing ratings and reviews on Apple Podcasts or anywhere where podcasts are found, talking about us to people, and joining us and thanking our producer and composer, Gwen.
Thank you, Gwen.
Yeah, big thanks to Gwen. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and until next time, you know, fuck a laser measurer.
Yeah, until next time, do it by hand.
Yeah, be honest with Mike.